So good afternoon now, not morning anymore. So you can tell by that bio, I'm not an epi person, so I'm always really interested to come to this conference because it actually is very useful for me to see things from more of an epi perspective. So I am a program evaluator. I work for the University of Iowa, clearly. So today we're going to be talking about, I know the intro on the program there says just cervical cancer that we're going to be talking about. We're actually going to talk about breast as well, so I know most of the people in this room have breast and a cervix, so yay! Okay, so using breast and cervical cancer screen data to improve outreach strategies. So fair warning, this is going to be talking about kind of a program that the evaluation of, we had some good ideas behind, we used our state epi for cancer to target some preventions, and it didn't quite go as planned, and sitting through other presentations like these are always the things I find helpful, but I think in terms of reaching out to epidemiologists, it's always really interesting to see how things don't always go as planned, despite best efforts with data. So here we go. That's just a disclosure. We all have to do it. Okay, so starting off just, you know, the implementation of the Affordable Care Act in Iowa, as it has in many places, I'm sure all of you know, has really changed the name in terms of all sorts of cancer screening. We're not currently doing a ton around lung cancer screening. We're doing mostly lung cancer primary prevention, but colorectal, breast, cervical cancer really changed the game. And this quote, I could have picked any, but this one is just one of my favorites from one of our program coordinators from our breast and cervical cancer screening program. We've been seeing this pop up in evaluations for the last couple years of all of our screening programs, is that it's been really, really tough for screening programs to recruit populations. So why is that the case? So many programs, you know, have relied on really long-term relationships. You know, best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. So a lot of our screening programs had great measures in place to get people to come in that had been in before. So now those people are insured, so they're not eligible for our screening programs anymore, which has been a big problem, and it's becoming a bigger problem every year as more and more people have enrolled in the marketplace plans, or also Iowa's a little bit special in our Medicaid expansion. We don't necessarily look like other states, but we did expand Medicaid, kinda. many former clients are insured, not eligible for programs of last resort. So like I said, we've been kind of working with this the last couple of years, really trying to go past that low-hanging fruit of people that have been in the program for a long time and really dig down into populations of extreme need for screening services. So why did we focus on Hispanics? So the Latino population in Iowa is large and growing. I know 5.5% in overall minority population doesn't sound large, but it's Iowa. And we are about 95% white right now. Most of our Hispanic Latino population is in that white population, but Latinos are our largest minority, ethnic or racial. And they are growing. So we had a pretty large increase between 2000 and 2013. And then by 2040, it's projected that Latinos are going to constitute about 12.4% of our population. So I don't know how many of you are from the heartland, but that can be pretty drastic in terms of changing populations and populations of need and services, especially around outreach. And then also, you know, Iowa being an agricultural kind of not totally centered economy, but having a large sector, both kind of processing and more traditional farming, we have a large population of migrant workers that access services, especially around cancer screenings. So that's also a big part of our population. That's not necessarily counted in official census or BRFA stuff, but they're there and they are accessing services. So this is just when we kind of set out on this endeavor. We did do a little bit of a literature review. I'm not going to bore you with all of the details of it. But Austin et al. In 2002, using the health belief model, just went through some reasons for low rates of breast and cervical cancer screening around Hispanic women. You know, none of the factors up there, I'm sure, is coming to a surprise to any of you. You know, low SES, the levels of education, lack of knowledge about programs, language is obviously a huge barrier, although we do know that from some of the other breakdowns in Iowa that we actually, our Hispanic and Latino population is actually pretty highly English-speaking. That's their main, or that's the language they speak at home. But then there's, you know, acculturalization issues as well. Cost of screenings prevention, obviously that's an outgrowth of low SES and other stuff. Fatalism avoidance beliefs. We haven't tested for this in Iowa itself, but it is a recurring kind of theme in the literature around Hispanics and Latinos with breast and cervical cancer, that a cancer diagnosis is really devastating for them in terms of just believing that that's the end and that you know, secondary screening isn't a meaningful thing because once you have breast cancer, you're going to die and it doesn't matter anyway, so screening for it's not really very useful. So also just, you know, fear and embarrassment. Getting a mammogram isn't fun. Getting a pap smear isn't fun. Even doing a standard breast exam isn't really fun. And knowing about that kind of stuff, especially if there's other barriers in place, you know, if you have to have your son or your husband drive you to an appointment and you're already embarrassed about these kind of services, it can be really tough. And then also few appropriate cues to action. So whether that means we're not advertising these kind of screening services well generally in areas that have large populations of Hispanic and Latino women, or just that, you know, maybe they're not in Spanish, or they're in Spanish but they're not well done materials. So all of that kind of stuff. And that's a general kind of study that Austin did. It wasn't specific to Iowa. Okay, so getting into the actual intervention that we did. So we had 15 counties that we had identified that had between 5 and 10% of their overall county population was Hispanic or Latino. So we didn't make them do anything. 11 volunteered to take part of this project. And like I said, when I say high concentrations, we're talking about between 5 and 10%, which again, for Iowa, that's quite large. So they were invited to propose outreach projects. This is kind of our effort to throw spaghetti against the wall. We weren't making anybody do anything. We wanted to see what they wanted to do. These are local public health departments. You know, the state doesn't have an interest in going in and telling them how to do it when it's a new area of work for us. So we wanted them to propose some ideas. The point about some programs containing more than one county I'll get to in another slide. So we coded and analyzed the frequency of the reported barriers and facilitators to success in their interim and year-to-date reports. I know qualitative, it's so scary. but we did do that, and then we also followed up with some interviews. And then I had originally planned, as the evaluator, to compare our funded programs to the non-funded programs, so the programs that, you know, didn't take us up on the... It wasn't a ton of funding, so, you know, no grief to the counties that didn't want to do it. But in the end, we actually found some more money, and a lot more counties wound up doing it. So no comparison data, but local public health got money, so yay. Okay, so this is just a map of our Care for Yourself, the name of our breast and cervical cancer screening programs. The blue is where the programs that got outreach counties are. As you can see, there's kind of a cluster in the middle of the state. Iowa is a pretty large state, so not a huge geographic distribution, but I do want to show you this next slide, which is the program service areas. So it's a pretty important thing when we're talking about this program to recognize that these numbers, which are the program numbers, are where our coordinators sit. So you could have somebody working in one county, and the outreach county that they're working in for their Hispanic Latino project may not be their county that they live in, may not be the health department they work for, and also they just may, like, geographically, they may live someplace and work another place. And I was a pretty big state, so if you look at that Region 15 over there, which is on most of our county health level rankings, the bottom, it's a pretty big place. So obvious barrier just there. Okay, so just one thing we all did, and I'm sorry I don't have a picture of the Spanish language card. We did, in a prior program year, develop a small media piece in Spanish. It was available to all the programs statewide. We had so many printed. And we did do an evaluation via an intercept survey of the English language card last year. We did not do a formal evaluation of the Spanish language card, which is unfortunate, but some things, not everything can get done, unfortunately, but that's just a picture of the card that was available to all the programs. So strategies utilized, and like I said, this is just the reported frequencies of barriers and facilitators. So, you know, 100%. 11 of 11 utilized some form of print material, so posters, postcards, flyers. 9 out of 11 utilized some kind of other promotional materials. A lot of them used grocery bags, actually, which is very interesting. And Iowa hasn't gone to a banned plastic bag initiative yet, but the grocery bag thing is, like, just hitting there, so it's really exciting promotional item for a lot of programs right now. Magnets, and then all 4 utilized the radio, so utilizing a public service announcement, and that was kind of a new area of work for a lot of our public health departments. 5 utilized the news program, so that's not radio, but like a local channel or something like that. And only 1 utilized social media, which I know kind of looks bad, but when you consider, I know cervical cancer, you know, it's a little bit younger population, and breast cancer is a little bit older, but in these cases, social media may not be the most important medium. I know, and a lot of people are like, oh, you're not using social media, what are you doing? It's like, well, let's think about the population we're trying to reach out to and how they're processing their need for program services data. You know, I don't look at my public health department's Facebook account. You know, we're actually finding a lot of people don't want to engage with health departments in that way. And that's just my own anecdotal evidence. If anybody has a study out there that shows differently, that's great. Anyway, so, and then 6 out of 11 held special outreach events, health fairs, kind of, et cetera. So 3 programs developed partnerships that gave them program referrals. So that's kind of direct referrals where they, we had one, probably the best example is that they partnered with Tyson Foods, which is a chicken processing plant. Very high percentage of Hispanic Latino women that work there, kind of low wage, traditional low wage factory work, and just did outreach events at that actual thing. We do have a mobile mammography van, so that was more breast cancer probably than cervical, and then referred for cervical. And then all of them developed at least one partnership to assist with outreach, and 4 programs developed partnerships for translation services, which I was actually quite impressed with because we don't necessarily have a ton of translation organizations in Iowa. So really good work there. And then 10 out of 11 programs utilized funding for either a part-time or full-time staff member. 3 programs recruited volunteers. 3 programs recruited Latino Hispanic women themselves, kind of more of a lay health worker, or Spanish-speaking staff. So maybe they weren't Latino or Hispanic, but they at least spoke Spanish. Okay, so this is where it kind of, like I said, didn't necessarily turn out the way we're supposed to, but it's important to think about things like these because otherwise we just think everything works well. So the county with the largest increase, you know, went from 3 women last year to 17 this year, and I know that doesn't sound like a huge increase, but keep in mind that many of Iowa's counties are very rural, and when we had the census data and we started on this, and this is just to show, like, epidemiology is wonderful, but if we can't break down small levels for rural spaces, it's not always the most helpful because we don't know who the population we're trying to reach is. So it was for overall Hispanic populations, and we do know on an aggregate level that the Hispanics in Iowa tend to be a little bit younger than in other places. We don't necessarily have an older Hispanic population, so again, not necessarily an issue for cervical cancer, but for breast cancer screening if we're not having women in that age range, and also wasn't taken down by sex. So like I said, we're getting into those rural jurisdictions. It's really hard to get down to that level of Hispanic woman over or under this age. So we're working on maybe some different estimates using a different methodology, but what we used at the beginning of this program wasn't necessarily the best means from the get-go, and that was more of a time and funding thing more than a want to do that. And they utilized the program that went from 3 to 17 women utilized print materials, a part-time staff member, and a translation volunteer. The average increase among women, the average increase among the small programs was 5 to 7 women. I think the mean was actually 5.5. The county with the least increase, and this is our problem ones, is 2 of our very large programs, 2 that actually sit in cities. I know Iowa has cities. It's shocking. So Des Moines, so Polk County, and then out Woodbury County, which is on the border with Nebraska, where Sioux City is, they actually decreased the number of Hispanic Latino women served. And what's really, and it totally threw off the descriptive, shocking, because their decrease was like, you know, over 100 women. So if you have an average increase of 5.5 and then one program, that's your clear outlier. It's a little tricky. Anyway, their big thing, though, was that in the prior program year, they increased by over 300 women. So it just goes to show you in terms of what goes on in programming, especially when you have these screening cycles for breast and cervical for 2 and 3 years, there's some pretty interesting variation that goes on that, you know, if you're just looking at it one program year and you're like, oh, we didn't make the date, you know, we didn't do this, it didn't happen. It's like, no, that's not actually true. Because you're probably looking, you know, it just goes to show that the outreach stuff you use in 1 year may not be the same tactics you need to use the next year because you may be looking at a different pool of women. So as I said earlier, we did see an increase in Hispanic Latino women kind of since 2011. Prior to 2011, I wasn't going to put all the years on here, but it was right around 10%. So this is kind of when it started to increase. And if you can see that 2014 number, that 25% is in large part due to those 2 programs, Sioux City and Des Moines, having very large increases in the number of Hispanic and Latino women served. So the major reported barriers. So 9 out of 11 programs reported a lot that it took a lot of time and effort to develop their messages, to build the partnerships, and generally just to conduct outreach. It was really interesting to see the difference between their interim year reports and their year-end reports, just how much of their time got sucked up in outreach, and they didn't necessarily feel that they had enough time to be doing that given the small amount of funding the state allotted. And then also 2 reported hiring challenges. You know, anybody that works for state or local or the state, you know, hiring challenges, you have best intentions, but it doesn't always work out the way you want. 7 out of 11 counties reported travel distance. Like I said with that map earlier, you know, we have some pretty big jurisdictions in terms of service areas. So if you're taking a large amount of your time to travel between, you know, Woodbury County and down to Pottawatomie County, you know, especially for these program coordinators that wear many hats at the state and local public health departments, I think it's really hard for them to give up their other duties to say, well, I'm going to spend, you know, half my day in transit driving. And then also follow up. It sounded like, and that not all of them gave us numbers. We're actually working to follow up with counties right now about whether them actually kept track of this specific data point. And I wish we'd thought about it on the front end, but we didn't. 8 out of 11 counties reported that they had a large issue with women scheduling a screening, so that outreach was effective, but then they didn't follow up for the actual screening, so it wasn't reported in the reimbursement numbers. So still a lot of work going in and there, but then no follow up. So that's, I know it was tough for a lot of programs. We actually had a lot of programs write us quite a few paragraphs on that specific point, which is fun to code. Okay, so just another reported barrier. This isn't going to come as a shock to anybody, but you know, the need for more / continued funding. This was, for most of the counties, this was the first year of money. We gave them a really small pot of money to, like I said, kind of throw spaghetti against the wall, figure out what they wanted to do, and figure out how they wanted to do it. Only 2 programs actually called us out on this, but it was pretty obvious in the rest of the text that, you know, programs really needed more than one year of funding to get it rolling. You know, given the amount of time they were spending on building messages, building their outreach strategies, building partnerships, you know, 1 year of funding, it's not enough to just give them cash and be like, okay, now we're good. We did the Hispanic Latino thing. Yay for us. So really big point we plan on highlighting in our report about all of our screening work. And then 9 out of 11 specifically noted at the expense of the outreach that, you know, it really took a lot of staff time to go out. I think people don't, it's hard to put a dollar amount on outreach. And aside from, you know, it took me this long to drive and that was that many of my hours, or it took me this much in gas, or it took me this much in a meal voucher. But, you know, outreach stuff, when you're asking for referrals for a mammography services or for cervical cancer, you really need to do it in person. And that takes time and it takes a lot of money. So, and also that people also reported a lot that they didn't have other funds to do this work, that we don't have enough flexible funding streams going into this program right now for them to pump up this specific part of their service. So we're giving them money for screening and we're giving them money for program management, but we're not necessarily doing the money around outreach. And if we're not giving them money for it, they're not able to use other funds in that way. So just kind of considerations, next steps. I already made this point, but I'll reiterate it. Screening cycles, you know, may make yearly numbers jump around, you know, especially around cervical cancer. It's a larger pool because younger women are advised to get cervical screenings, but, you know, on a 3-year kind of tilt, you know, we may lose a lot in 3 years. Or, you know, maybe once our 3-year mark comes around for this program, we'll see numbers jump back up because we can get people back in that stage where we used to be with BCC-EDP, where we had women returning to the program. Partnerships that can help with referrals may still be stressed themselves from AC implementation or other reasons. We had a number of programs report that they took a lot of time doing outreach, but at the end they weren't necessarily able to secure a partnership with somebody. And what we know in Iowa is a lot of our kind of nonprofit organizations and community-based organizations that are doing health-related work are also ACA navigators. So they are pretty swamped with ACA changes as well, and you know, they're still reeling from a lot of that change. So, you know, I know it's really hard for programs to do their outreach and realize that they put in all that work and then someone still doesn't want to partner with them, but it's reality. Outreach is time intensive. I've probably belabored that point. And just, we need to do more, the state needs to do more with having sites share materials. We did not quite realize how much time was getting sucked up in terms of developing messages and developing this kind of stuff. And like I said, because we did really want to be flexible and see what worked and have a solution that was really Iowa-based and community-based, we really let sites go out and do their own thing. But in doing that, I think we now have a lot of counties with a lot of different materials and not necessarily given this design, which is just very basic, I understand that, but not necessarily a great understanding of what really worked well and what didn't work well in terms of messages and stuff. So I think that'll kind of be one of our next steps, is testing actual messages and seeing what really resonated versus what didn't. So just quick conclusion, you know, those numbers I showed, the Hispanic Latino population is projected to increase a lot in Iowa. It's also across the nation, if anybody's been paying attention. And many individuals in this population are going to continue to lack insurance. So targeting outreach services to this population will continue to be a very worthy endeavor. And, you know, knowing which strategies show at least promise, they may not necessarily be evidence-based yet, but knowing what local solutions really show promise is a really worthwhile endeavor. And like I said, we gave them a kind of a small pot of money, so in the end, we think for bang for our buck, we did pretty well. So just quick thank you to my colleagues at IDPH, which is our Iowa Department of Public Health, and our, you know, some of my other contacts at the university. And questions?
Yes, you mentioned right at the end about knowing which strategies show promise. Did you try to count the number of women served per type of intervention so that, you know, let's say, did all the programs that use the translator have an increase or a decrease? Did all the programs that used some other intervention have an increase or a decrease to see which ones worked or didn't work?
We did try to do that. The problem was because we had such a small sample size of 11 original programs, and like I said, it was never going to be a straight control group, but my comparison group kind of, I wasn't going to say, no, don't give other programs money for the sake of my little evaluation here. So that kind of fell apart. And what we really found was every community was using a very different mix based on the resources that were available to them. So kind of when we told some of the programs that we might be interested in doing something like that, they were really like, well, you know, we have monthly calls with the program coordinators. They would say, like, but we're not going to be able to do that. So if you say that the way forward is for everybody to have a full-time staff member and a translator, not every county is in a position to do that. So I think we did look at doing some stuff like that, and we do have some more statistics just around who saw increases and who didn't, and we're going into that next layer of data now. But not as clear-cut as I would have liked, so no.
Did you survey the landscape? It took so much time to get ramped up and figure out how to market. I mean, I would have thought in 2015, these programs have been going on for, I don't know what, 15 years or so, you know, around the country, maybe somebody would have said, well, here's best practices. Could we give our 11 county health departments a menu of 5 best practices from around the country and say, choose from that list or something? That kind of would have made sense. And second question is, it would have seemed to me like the data I would like to see presented is for these 11 programs, year by year, say for the last 3, 4, 5 years, if there's this cyclic thing, that you should present, you know, the number of, say, Hispanic women every year in each of these 11, and then a total to see if, you know, for all we know, the reason it went up in several programs is because they had a down year previously. So
right.
It's critical to, you know.
Yeah, so that is actually true for 2 of the bigger programs, is they had their down year this year. But this is really the first year we looked about it in depth. Like I said, we did do a literature review, and we sent that out to the some of the counties. I'm not sure that all of them looked at it. Literature reviews, I think they're friendly, but not everybody does, obviously. So we did give them some ideas, and they did have to get their projects approved by us. You know, the BCCEDP program in Iowa has been around for a long time, but like I said, this idea of focusing on Hispanics is somewhat new. And I think in a lot of cases, like I said, it's not a new population, but because the screening dollars have been used for the same women for so many years, it's going to that next level of people who have even more barriers than these programs are kind of used to doing outreach to. And I know that's not a satisfying answer, but we're just trying to drill down deeper in terms of seeing what other barriers might exist that we haven't previously thought about, because I think in prior program years, we thought a lot about, okay, how do we get our women back, and how do we send out reminders, and how do we bring them back into the program, and how do we, you know, we also utilize our colorectal screening dollars to be like, okay, how do we get husbands in, so it's kind of a new way of thinking about things in the post-ACA world, and
we're all trying to market public health nowadays, aren't we? You know, we know what works, and we got to get them in for colonoscopes or screenings, and how do we make that happen? Even workplace wellness programs are trying to do the same thing, you know, within, you know, people who have insurance.
So I think a lot of the issues in Iowa, especially with our rural public health departments, and most of Iowa is very rural, is they don't really have the capacity in this kind of stuff. And this area specifically of doing outreach to a lot of community-based organizations that are doing work with Hispanics and Latinos is pretty new for us. So we did disseminate some best practices, but like I said, we really didn't want to say, like, this is what the literature says that you have to do, and this will work. And we didn't want to make promises to people that we know we couldn't keep. So like I said, spaghetti against the wall.
Okay. Thank you, Anne, for the nice presentation.